Hi, Steve Artimer here, and welcome to the New Life Live podcast. We hope to provide help and hope in your life through God's Word, counselors, and psychologists as we answer questions from listeners who call with the challenges of life. Let's go to today's episode.
Hello, everyone. We are so glad that you decided to join us today. We are taking some calls, and by we, I'm talking about Dr. Jill Hubbard, who is a clinical psychologist and a longtime co-host of New Life Live, as well as JJ West, who is a marriage and family therapist and our presenter at Every Man's Battle and our Intimacy in Marriage. These folks know some things, and we can answer your questions if you want to give us a call at 1-800-229-3000. Right now, I want to hear from you, Jill. What is under?
Hi, guys. So I'm wanting to talk a little bit about a new area of interest for me. I've had several people recently ask me about pathological demand avoidance or persistent drive for autonomy. And so this is something that I have been looking at. In our field of psychology, we're always trying to learn new things about human behavior and why we do the things we do. And it keeps evolving and growing. And so we tend to, name clusters that we are seeing, clusters of symptoms. So pathological demand avoidance, it's not a diagnostic category, but it is often thought of as a subset of autism spectrum disorders. And so it was first seen, and I believe it was first coined by a developmental psychologist, Elizabeth Newsom, in the 1980s. So it's taken a while to surface, and as I said, it was first seen along with autism, but now it's kind of spreading out to other people as well. And so what is this? And how is it different from the other diagnostic categories that we already have? Pathological demand avoidance is the extreme inability to comply to even things that seem simple, things that you know how to do, you're capable of doing, but there's a shutting down. And for some people, they can say, well, how is this different from oppositional defiant disorder? And we see that often with children, which is a willful resistance and a holding on to control. With pathological demand avoidance, it's not that willful resistance. It's more of a collapse, a collapsing on oneself and an inability to follow through. And so a lot of times, too, we see this, what goes along with this is extreme anxiety. People are extremely anxiety-ridden, they're overwhelmed, and so it's an illogical form of trying to control what feels too much for a person. And so there isn't this, I'm trying to just, be malicious, and I'm trying to, I don't care. They care very much. But they have an inability. Like, here's a couple examples. A kid that says, I can go with you, but I can't put on my shoes. Well, what do you mean you can't put on your shoes? I just can't today. And so things like that seem really like simple tasks. I can't brush my teeth. I can't eat the food that I've prepared. I can't follow through on that task because everything feels like a demand. Even the demands or the desires that I have for myself feel like way too much. And so it's a struggle to deal with this, and certainly frustrating for parents, and it can persist into young adulthood and beyond. And so how do we deal with this? How do we deal with helping someone feel like things are not demands? And so give you a little bit more.
I love learning that. Yeah, I love learning that. And I think it helps us have insight into folks that might be in our life that are struggling like this. We'll be right back after the break.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. Jill, you were making us all smarter in the opening
well,
there
I'm
about
not quite doing it. justice, but
I wanted to repeat what it was: pathological demand avoidance.
Yes.
And what can someone do if this?
So a couple of tips for managing this is to realize that they don't want to be this way. They're not trying to be mean. They really are just so overwhelmed. It's almost like an internal panic attack. So one of the ways to approach is to be very respectful of that. And instead of "you need to do this" or "you should do this," to rephrase things from a less demanding approach. Would you consider? Have you thought of? Might we look at it this way? And get them to then feel like they have some choice in the matter.
I love that.
So
and you know, if you have a loved one, if you have a loved one that this may be what they're dealing with, of course, we want you to get connected with a psychologist and do, you know, some great, diagnostics and get moving in a good direction. But I love that insight, Jill, and we're learning all the time. Hopefully
yes,
we are. Right now we are going to go to the calls, and we're going to talk with Paul, who's calling us from Capitol Heights, Maryland, listens on WAVA. Hello, Paul. Thanks for waiting. How can we help you today?
Oh, how you doing? Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay.
So, hello, yes, we can.
Okay, so let me get into it. So it's like I'm in a strange part of my life for some odd reason. And I'm 57, so I've been through a lot. I've been on the top, been on the bottom, and I didn't always follow God. My journey started around when I was around 45. I got a little more serious. I decided to read the Bible completely, cover to cover, and I learned a lot. Now, where I'm at in my life now is that it's like I'm under some kind of, I don't know if I can even call it an attack or whatever, but it's like the more I try, the more things occur. So, like, I can wake up today and I got a flat tire. Or I woke up this morning, now this has just happened, I woke up this morning and my phone was dead. My phone is complete, so I just had to go to a shop, get my phone repaired, spending money. I get it. It's like the harder I'm working, the more it's like I'm not prospering nowhere. And I'm like, what is going on with my life? You know, I changed everything, and I've changed a lot in my life. And I can identify when there's something happening. And I sit back and I meditate and I'll talk. I would just have talks with God, like, what's going on? What more do you need me to do? I mean, I'm trying to do everything.
All right. Well, Paul, we hear the frustration. Well, let's hear from JJ. JJ, how would you direct Paul when you feel like everything's going wrong and you're doing all the right things? What are you supposed to do?
Yeah, Paul, thanks for the call. I mean, it's, you know, it's not uncommon to feel this. In fact, it's a biblical perspective. So if you go back to the Book of Psalms is actually broken up into five different books. The first book obviously starts with Psalm 1. And Psalm 1, the basic tenet of Psalm 1's basic theme is the righteous will prosper and the wicked will perish. And then book 2 opens with Psalm 42, where the psalmist says, you know, the wicked will still perish, but sometimes the righteous suffer a little bit. Sometimes it doesn't always go well for them. By the time you get to book 3, which is Psalm 73, everything has gotten turned on its head. And the psalmist is saying, I look around me and the wicked are prospering and the righteous are suffering. What gives, God? Why is this? I don't understand. If I've been told all my life, if I'm righteous before God, if I keep my way pure, then life's going to work out for me. And all of a sudden it's not. And so I don't understand. Am I doing something wrong? Are you not coming through for me? What's the deal? Is there something more I'm supposed to be doing? So it's not a new concept. What's interesting is, at the end of that psalm, the psalmist, he's having a conversation with God, like you were saying, And God kind of pulls back the lens, and he gets to see a broader picture, and he says, I saw their inevitable end. In other words, that this life that we're living now is not the whole story, okay? And that there was suffering for them later, as well as a connection with God for me. But here's the other thing that we have to keep in mind. If we are trying to live a godly life, the enemy of our soul will always try to thwart that. The enemy of our soul hates God, hates everything to do with God, and does not want us to make any progress toward God. He doesn't want us to look any more like God. He doesn't want us to act any more like God. And so as we're trying to live a holy life, as we're trying to live a life of integrity before God, the enemy is going to throw all kinds of things in our way. And spiritual attack isn't just I'm being tormented by demonic thoughts. Spiritual attack can be my broken phone and my flat tire and my bank account mm-hmm. draining before the next paycheck. Spiritual attack can be the nasty gram I got from the coworker. And God is saying, will you trust me to be with you even when life is not going the way that you would have it go? Will you trust me to work things out for you in a way that is good for you in the long run, trust knowing that I am your good father? And so, yeah, we are. We're going to experience all kinds of obstacles as we walk this path because we're trying to live a life that pleases God. We're trying to look like God. And the enemy says, no, 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 I got to do whatever I can to keep you from making any progress. I got to do whatever I can to keep you discouraged and to get you off track. And so what I would say is it's really important that when we're walking this journey and we're encountering those obstacles, that we've got people around us who walk with us. We've got those four friends carrying us to Jesus when we're the paralytic. We've got people who are saying, I'm with you on the journey. And when you're tired, you can lean on me.
I love that. Jill, what would
love
you add
to that, JJ. And I was thinking along similar lines that as we are drawing closer to the Lord, the enemy does throw in obstacles. And Paul, what you're experiencing is called life in this fallen world. A lot of times we have the hope and almost the fantasy that, okay, we're going to strengthen our walk with the Lord and life is going to go better. And in some ways it does, because we can handle more, because we know where to take things. But in other ways, it gets harder. I mean, look at the disciples, what it costs them to follow Jesus. And so these things that happen are day-to-day things. We are not immune as Christians from the day-to-day trials of life. And our job is to keep persevering and moving forward.
I love that.
My only thing is that, how long? I mean, and I asked,
how long?
How much do you think I can take? Because I'm telling you, I can't begin to describe the stuff. I done been through three surgeries. I done lost my house. I done lost all my property, three cars. It's very overwhelming. And it's great. And I'm in a depressive state. And I can identify that I am depressed. I am depressed. But I got to get up and I got to keep striving, because my bills don't stop. So I got to keep working.
That's right. And Paul,
it's not easy.
It's not easy at all.
It's not easy. And I'm like, how much do I suppose to take? I know I got to go through stuff. But I'm like, can I just get...
Well, but Paul...
But I think that's the wrong question, Paul. It's not how much, how long, because it's until we meet him in eternity. But it's taking each day in doing what we can, breaking it down into smaller chunks that are doable. And as JJ was saying, you need support around you, even to just vent and say, oh my gosh, this happened today and this happened and this happened. You need people around you and community, because that's how we bear it. How do we bear life? It's too much, Lord. I mean, look at the psalmist as he was talking. They cried out all through the Bible, where are you, Lord? Have you forsaken us? And he has not, but we need help in bearing it because it is too much. You're absolutely right.
And Paul, here's the thing that, you know, what they're both saying is that you can't do this on your own, and we're going to get you connected with some help because we have to be able to have a different perspective. We may be stuck in thinking, why me? Why does this keep happening? When is this ever going to be done? And it's amazing what happens when you come alongside of trusted wisdom. And they say, well, have you ever tried this? Or have you ever thought about that? And then all of a sudden you have a different perspective. That's what group work is about. That's what counseling is about. Good friends that will walk your life with you. We'll get you connected with the Life Recovery Group as well. I don't know if any kind of addiction is part of your story, or recovery may be part of your story. But listen, recovery is for everyone. And I think that that can be a pathway for you as well. I'm going to send you a copy of Dave Stoop's book, You Are What You Think, because he talks about meditating on scripture and changing the way that we perceive things that are happening to us. And boy, we're so glad that you called, Paul, and we will be praying for you, and we'll get you connected.
Becky, can I add one more thing?
Yes.
Real quick. So I just want to say, Paul, it's important in all through scriptures, we see lamenting happening. Mm-hmm. And it's important for us to lament. It's important for us to cry out, to pour out our heart to God. And so when life is not going the way that we would have it go, when we are suffering the way that you have and are suffering, it's important that we pour out our heart before the Lord and say, I'm hurting, I'm frustrated, I'm overwhelmed. Don't you see me, God? And then to let sit in that space, to let God speak to us and remind us that he's the same God who enters into our suffering with us. He's not aloof. He's not a God who is distant. He's a God who is near. He's Emmanuel, right? God with us. And he comes into our pain. He's not someone who's unacquainted with our suffering. He suffered with us so that he understands and then can strengthen us as we suffer. So just, I think it's important. I'm glad you called. This is part of that lamenting process. Continue to do that. Continue to surround yourself with some people who can be that listening ear as you pour out your heart. Sorry, that's it.
Yeah, I think that is so true. And I think, and I know I don't want to give Paul any ideas, but it reminds me of Job, because, you know, it was one thing after the other, right? And God had a purpose for the suffering that Job was still learning from.
And Becky, can
Joe, were you going to add something?
Yes, I want to add one more thing. And Paul, when you're feeling depressed, depression limits your options. It's hard to see all of the options. And that's part of needing other people to come alongside. Hopefully not like Job's friends, but at the same time, to help us expand our view of what we're going through.
Yeah, you know, the hardest part about struggles is that we're all going to have them. It is just a part of this life. And sometimes they feel like they're coming one after the other after the other. We're going to go back to the calls. We're so grateful that you called, Paul. We're going to talk with Sandra, who's calling from Palm Springs and listens on KNLB. Hello, Sandra. How are you doing today? And how can we help you? Oh, there is the music. Sandra, you can hear the music. And I don't want to have to interrupt your question. Do you have a quick question, or do you after that break?
I do. I have tried everything. I have a horrible pathological gambling addiction of 20 years, and it has just destroyed my life. And I can't stop. I don't know how to stop. So my question is, how can I stop doing what I'm doing, and my intentions are to never do it again? And, you know, as soon as I get money, or I'm anxious.
Well, we'll talk about that. Sandra, we'll talk about it after the break. Thanks for calling in.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. We are so grateful that you are listening to us. We are helping people all along the way. And right now we're talking with Sandra. And Jill, let's start with you. How can we help Sandra, who's struggling with a gambling addiction?
Well, Sandra, thank you for calling today. 20 years is a really long time to be struggling. So the most obvious question is, have you been to Gamblers Anonymous?
Yes, and we had about 5 meetings here. Now they're down to 1, and once a week. And the problem is, I'm so ashamed of how far down I've gone that there are people that I don't want to run into. So I thought about going out of town until I got a handle on it.
Sandra, sorry to interrupt you. So what you're describing is really common with all addictions. When you start in a program and you get to know people and then suddenly you're not doing well, I mean, this happens in Overeaters Anonymous, in Alcoholics Anonymous, and then it's hard to go back because now you feel shame with these people. And that is part of the cycle that keeps you stuck. The way we heal our shame is not by avoiding and isolating. We have to go through it. And it's a hard thing, and I can totally appreciate that it is so hard to go back where you know people. But the only way you're going to feel the healing love of others is to bring your shame into relationship. That's the number one thing, is showing up and letting people love you in spite of what you think is your failing. And everybody in that room has failed, or they wouldn't be sitting there. But I know that when you're crippled with the anxiety.
It's not the people in the room. It's okay. Where the meeting is held. Because I used to be associated with the building that it's in.
Okay.
I was in fact a treasurer of the building, so I don't. I really need my anonymity.
Okay, so then in that case, if that's a place where you worked or were associated with, there, and I'm sorry, the meetings aren't as frequent, but you can even start with meetings online, or like you said, drive out of town. The most important thing is that you get some form of support, because 20 years is a long time and you don't want it to be the next 5, 10, 20 years.
Right.
And you have to be in some kind of program in order to get through it.
Yeah,
I realize that. And there's not a lot of help. I mean, we have thousands of people. They don't. You know, you have an Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and I might even attend one of those.
Well, you could.
A little simpler.
You could, and just substitute what your addiction is, but the feelings are similar.
Yeah,
and it's
not identification. The identification totally is not there, and it's still.
I understand.
And so then I have nobody to talk to about it. Mm-hmm. And I've isolated all my friends. I'm basically, I just go to work and then I spend my paychecks. And then I struggle with everything. And it's overwhelming. It's just overwhelming.
Yes.
Very.
If I stop now, I'm going to lose my home and other things.
Sandra, let's hear from JJ. JJ's dealing, he helps people with addiction challenges all the time. And JJ, we know that addiction is an intimacy disorder, first and foremost. And that's what Sandra is describing.
Absolutely.
How can we help her?
Yeah, we you know, every addiction that we encounter, every addiction we deal with starts with isolation. Starts with in my shame, I'm going to disconnect. I'm going to isolate. I'm going to hide. I'm going to hide from God. I'm going to hide from friends and family, coworkers, neighbors, and I'm even going to try and hide from myself. I don't want to even look at myself in the mirror anymore. I don't want to acknowledge who I am, who I've become. And what's interesting is that the pathway to freedom, this is what Jill just talked about, the pathway to freedom is through connection. It's doing the very opposite of what my shame is telling me to do. My shame is telling me, cut everybody off, shut everybody out. No one could possibly accept me as I am with what I've done. No one could possibly love me the way that I am living my life. So I've got to cut everybody off. And that further entrenches me in the disease. If what I instead do is go, okay, I'm going to find some people to trust and to bring my life into the light, that's when I start to experience freedom. And I can then start to look at what are the reasons, what are the things that I'm trying to hide from in my addiction? And I can start to develop a plan where I've got activities that give me life that are not as intense as the gambling, but I also don't have the hangover that the gambling does. Obviously, we got some music. We got to take a break here in a second. But Sandra, if you'll hang on, we've got a couple more things maybe to share with you.
Yes, you can hear the music. And, you know, it's the hardest thing. And it's probably not that unusual that the very place that you need to go to a group, you have feelings about. That's just the way it works sometimes. We'll be right back after this break.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Club New Life supporters who give a monthly donation because they want to continue to offer help and hope in these very, very difficult places. To find out more about Club New Life, you can go to our website, newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, if you're new to us, we drop an episode every weekday. We would love it if you would rate or write a review, which helps more people discover help and hope and helps us share wisdom with as many people as possible. Now, let's listen to our counselors as they help people walk through life's hardest places.
We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. We are talking with Sandra, and JJ had a couple of quick thoughts you wanted to offer to her.
I just wanted to say that Sandra, as painful and as shameful as it feels to walk through those doors of the building that you already have some association with, it's going to be more painful and more shameful to stay in your addiction and lose everything. And there is freedom on the other side of being known. It doesn't feel like it on this side, but when you get on the other side, there's actually freedom there. And so it just as painful as it may feel right now, I would encourage you, instead of trying to find the reasons why that group won't work or why recovery won't work, you start to cling to what is it that I can do that would make it work? What can I let go of in order to make it work?
And we are going to. And Sandra, can I just add one more thing? And Sandra, it's not lost on us that you were the treasurer of that building, so we know that it's doubly hard. You might consider starting with individual therapy to also look at the anxiety that comes up that then fuels the gambling fantasy that tries to pull you out of your discomfort, as well as you said you've isolated from everyone, but is there one person that would go to a meeting with you because there's strength in numbers?
I didn't know if she heard you.
Yeah,
well,
I have cut.
You know what?
I've cut my family off. I've cut everybody off.
It might mean confessing to someone, but
yeah. So, Sandra, what we'll do is we'll get you connected with a therapist. We'll also get you connected with a life recovery group because even though it's not specific to gambling, we know that recovery can be a process forward. I'm going to send you a copy of the Life Recovery Bible. there is hope, and it is found in a process and a path towards freedom from this addiction, and we believe that it can happen. Stay on the line, and we'll get you connected. We're going to talk with Jane now. She's calling us from Allentown, Pennsylvania. Listens on WBYN. Jane, thank you so much for waiting. How can we help you today?
Thanks for taking my call. My niece informed us actually right on Easter Day. We were all gathered, and she took my brother and I aside, and she told us that her 2.5-year-old daughter had been sexually molested by a family member. And my question is, I mean, she's already seeking counseling for her daughter. The person, the man, has already, you know, it's already in the police's hands. But my question is, how much does a 2.5-year-old remember? She told the story to her dad nonchalantly, like there was nothing wrong. She just started, you know, dad was giving her a bath, and she started, her dad was giving her a bath, and she just blurted out like there was nothing wrong with it. So how will that affect her the rest of her life? That's my question.
Okay, Jill?
Well, it sounds like, Jane, that the family has responded, they've taken it seriously, and they've taken action. Yeah. So that's really helpful, because how people respond to a trauma really does impact how somebody can move through it. So I know 2.5 sounds really young to be in therapy, but therapists who specialize in this, they do forms of play therapy, and also they would be working with the parents to help guide, and as this child gets older and things come up, how to intervene. So it might not be just a one-time treatment now, but it would be an introduction, and then as she gets older and things come up, a place to go back and continue to process. So this can be a situation where something unfortunate happened to her, but it doesn't have to color her whole life. And the responsiveness of your niece is excellent. I mean, that's really important, because people are re-traumatized by not being believed, by it not taken seriously, and it shoved under the carpet.
Yeah, yeah. JJ, would you add anything?
Just that you're right. There's not a whole lot of explicit memories when we're that young, mm-hmm. but there is implicit memory. And so what can happen is there may be down the road for your niece's daughter, there may be relational issues or even body image issues that might come up that might be related. But the fact that they're responding so well now makes it less likely that that will be problematic for her in the future.
Agree. Jane, we're going to send you a copy of How We Love Our Kids. I'm so grateful to hear that you did report it, that you're in counseling, because here is the complete opposite. And we're saying, go do all the things that you guys have already done. So I think that's really great. And we will be praying for you guys, because this is a journey, you know, and we want her healing to be complete. We're going to go back to the calls, and we're talking with Terry, who's calling us from Louisville, Kentucky, and listens online. Hello, Terry. Oh, and she's gone. I don't know how that happens sometimes, but it does. We're going to keep going. We're going to talk with Eleanor, who's calling us from Boston and listens on WEZE. Hello, Eleanor. Thanks for calling. How can we help you today?
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call. This is such a priceless resource, and I'm in awe of your knowledge and your approach to all callers. And I'd love to meet you all for coffee, but I'll talk fast so other callers can join. I have a wonderful family. We're extremely close. I'm 84 years old. This is the first conflict we have ever had. I'm so respected and loved by my family that I probably will cry during my conversation. Of my 8 grandchildren, they're 28 to 34 years old. A couple of them are married. One granddaughter is gay, and she recently married a woman. Another granddaughter is engaged, and her fiancé would not attend the gay wedding. I had no problem with that. That's a choice. And her cousins are feeling very upset that he wouldn't go to the gay wedding, and they're supporting their gay cousin. So they're not going to go to my engaged daughter's upcoming wedding just because her fiance would not attend the gay marriage. I have tried everything from the Bible to books of wisdom, which actually directed me to call you. And I honestly don't know if I should continue. Oh, by the way, he's a strong Christian, extremely Catholic, but he is living with my granddaughter for 2 years, and this caused the dilemma. If he had said, I can't live with you until we marry, I think everything would have been fine if he didn't attend the wedding. But they were living together, so what I'm trying to convince them to go. I've tried everything from not judging and loving a family, but nothing is working. Do I give up, or is there some way I convince them to go, or should I convince them to go?
Well, Eleanor, I love your spirit. I hope that when I'm 84, that I am as delightful as you are. I just want to say that right up front. JJ, let's start with you. Families in crisis, and you know, it's always something. How would you direct
Eleanor?
It is
always something. And by the way, Eleanor, I love your name because that's my grandmother's name who passed away a few years ago. And so,
thank you.
Very, very sweet. No, you can't convince anyone of anything. You can't convince them to go. Now, you can share your thoughts. You can share your opinion. But we're not able to convince anyone of anything. We're not able to make them behave a certain way is what I mean to say. We can convince them through arguments on certain things. Obviously, you're right. The hypocrisy of, you know, I'm going to behave one way, but I'm going to hold you to a different standard of sexual integrity of some sort, obviously that becomes very problematic. What I wouldn't so much focus on the rightness and the wrongness or what he did versus what they're doing. I would ask them to consider the impact that this is having on their cousin, because it's her or their cousin, right? Because it's her fiance. Right. It's her fiance who refused to come. Did she also refuse to come to the wedding?
Oh, no. She went to the gay wedding with no problem.
She did. Okay. Yeah.
She
So I would just encourage them to consider the impact of their not attending their cousin's wedding on their cousin and the relationship with her, as opposed to how it may or may not impact him and whether it's rewarding his bad behavior, but really focused on how it's going to, what it's going to cost her and what it's going to cost them in terms of the relationship.
Right.
Jill?
Well, I do agree. It's people over principles whenever possible.
Okay.
And so we want to preserve relationship as best as we can. And that may mean that we need to take a stand by letting people know how we feel. Okay. And once that's done, to be able to then move forward with them doesn't mean we condone the behavior, but it means we love them in spite of it, just as Jesus would. And I'm wondering how many people in the family are refusing to go to their wedding because they're living together and they disagree with that.
No, that actually wasn't the issue. And
I understand that. I understand that, but that's the double standard here.
Okay.
Right.
By the way,
well,
I'm very close to him, and he talks to me all the time, and he's begging me to have them attend this wedding.
Hold on, Eleanor. Hold on.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. I mentioned at the top that JJ is one of our presenters at our Intimacy and Marriage Intensive, and we're talking with Eleanor about a marriage. And, you know, if maybe you want to take a free short quiz to see what your marital health is, you can go to newlife.com and click on the Intimacy and Marriage tab. We are talking with Eleanor, and Eleanor, bless your heart, you're trying to keep the whole family together, and you're just not cooperating. JJ, you had another thought that you wanted to offer to Eleanor.
I do. Okay, so the fact that he is close with you and he's asking you, please make this happen, get them to come to the wedding, which is kind of interesting that he thinks you have this, you know, power to just make make the rest of the cousins behave in a certain way.
Right.
But I think so you have a unique position with him. You can go to him and say, listen, what's his first name?
Phil.
Phil.
Okay, you guys. Hey, Phil, I can't make any of the other cousins come to your wedding, but I think you have the ability to persuade them by how you behave. And if if you were able to communicate with them that it was wrong for you to demand that the other cousin hold a sexual standard that you haven't been willing to hold, and your refusal to go, that it was wrong for you to do that and to make amends with them, it's a lot more likely that they would be willing to come to your wedding if you would humble yourself rather than just taking this stand of, I was right because the Bible says you shouldn't do that.
Right. Well, my other problem is the fact that I'm sort of fighting everyone because I feel it's a choice. It's between you and God, and I'm not judging him. Because if I get judged, I'm in big trouble.
Oh, absolutely. Right. I'm not saying that we should sit in judgment of others. But what but where scripture, where it says that we need to judge ourselves first, right? The pastor where it says don't judge others, he's saying, look, first take the plank out of your own eye so then you can see clearly, right? Okay, so Phil needs to take the plank out of his eye of, I've been living this hypocritical life, and then demanding that other people obey scriptures that I'm not fully obeying myself, right? So there's an opportunity for him to humble himself, which might open the door for at least discussion to say, hey, we don't agree with the way you behave. We don't agree with the fact that you refuse to go to so-and-so's wedding. But out of love for our cousin, we'll come to yours because you've humbled yourself.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Mm-hmm. That is fabulous. Thank you so much. I'm going to try that.
Okay.
Eleanor, we're going to send you a copy of 100 Days of Peace, because I think that you're going to probably want some of that as you walk through this. We'll be praying for this situation. We've got just enough time to do one more call. We're going to talk with Danny, who's calling us from Lynchburg. He listens on NRB, and we're so glad that you waited for so long, Danny. We're glad that you're here. How can we help you?
Hey, my name's Danny Becky. I know you from AACC, so I just want to say hi, first of all. It's been a little bit since I talked to you in September. Okay, so, like, here's my situation. Without going into a lot of detail, my husband has mismanaged or misplaced about $68,000 in the last year or two. So I don't know where it's going. He's not telling me. I don't know what to do as a Bible-believing woman. You know, what is my responsibility? What isn't? So that's kind of what I don't know. And I'm afraid I might lose my house. It's valued at about, right now I'm looking at it online, about $247,000. And I'm afraid that with his type of debt and him going into whatever he's doing, whether it be immoral, impractical, or illegal, or anything like that, that we may be losing the home. And I don't really want to do that because I'm doing my part and he's not his. So what do? Don't know.
Oh, okay. Jill?
Wow, Danny, that's huge. And the fact that he has is kind of keeping you in the dark about what has happened. So I'm assuming that he knows where the money has gone. He just has not.
He knows.
Okay. Okay. So, and now you know it's gone, so it's no longer a secret. So I'm imagining you've confronted him on this?
Oh, yeah. I've talked to counselors. I've talked to pastors. I've talked to friends. I've
But have you
for a multitude of
confronted your husband?
Yeah. When he told me about it, I'm like, well, I asked him, I said, well, where did it go? What happened to it? You know, what are you going to do about retirement? Because he's planning on the 28th of May to retire and get Social Security. So
He's
thinking he can live on that, and he's not going to be able to do that. So it's just really a weird situation.
So, yes, but you guys, the trust has been broken.
Yeah, no joke.
Right? This is a severe rupture in your relationship. And I think that's a starting point for repair, is that he felt he had to lie to you. He got himself in such a state. And either he, you know, totally took it upon himself to lie to you, or you maybe falsely trusted him. And maybe ignored the situation. And so how can the two of you come together and start with complete honesty? And you do need someone to help mediate that, because everything needs to be put on the table in order for you to move forward in your relationship and your financial relationship. And then what are the other issues that have been being ignored that then got played out in the financial arena? Because we know that is often reflective of other things in our life.
Well, the oneness is not there, Becky. The oneness, togetherness. And I see him for maybe an hour or two a week. Okay. And so it's like roommates with benefits. And now the financial part. So it's really a weird thing.
Danny, the financial thing too, you may need to get some legal advice on how to keep the financial piece from impacting you, or to stop the bleeding. So I think you should get a legal consult. And some people have gone as far as to do a legal separation in order to contain the funds. And that's an extreme stance, but sometimes it's necessary.
Is that biblical, though?
Okay, JJ.
That's my question.
Okay.
Is it biblical?
Well, let's ask JJ. We just got a couple minutes. JJ?
Yeah. Okay, so yes, it's biblical to make sure that the person who is misusing or abusing you in some way is no longer able to do that. Okay, so that doesn't mean that we're going to divorce necessarily. It means that I need to make sure that my house isn't taken out from under me because of your misbehavior. So it is going to be important to include, you know, find out from a lawyer, talk to a financial professional. Maybe your church can recommend both of those, but make sure that you're talking with someone, because he can't continue to behave the way he's behaving and put your life at risk, put your financial stability at risk. So yes, it's completely biblical to set up a standard where he can no longer take advantage of you financially the way that he has been.
Mm-hmm. And maybe his name comes off the house.
Right.
Different things like that.
Yeah. And obviously, like you said, there's got to be a mediator that sits down and says, okay, we're going through all the finances for the last 2 years, and you have to account for every dime that's been spent so that we know what we're talking about. And as well, it'd probably be helpful to talk with a marriage counselor about, why are we living a life where we only see each other an hour a week? That's not a relationship.
Right. Danny, we're going to send you a copy of Henry Cloud's book, Trust, and we'll be praying for this situation. Thank you, callers, for calling today. Remember, we have a matching gift campaign going on right now. Please give to New Life. It makes a difference. You can go to newlife.com/donate. You can call 1-800-NEW-LIFE, or you can text the word MATCH to 28950. Thank you, JJ, and thank you, Jill. Thank you, callers and listeners.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope something you heard will help you live in freedom today. If this content was helpful for you, we would love it if you'd take a minute, leave us a review, post about it, and rate it. Remember, we have resources and workshops online for you as you continue your journey. Go to newlife.com and find out more information. And thank you for being part of the New Life community. We know that God desires all of us to live a life of wholeness and healing, and we're so glad that you're here.